Afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2023. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. And I have with me, as always, my regular Monday co-host, broadcasting from London, England, Paul Edward Stevenson. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Richard. Great to be with you.
Yes, always glad to have you. How was your week and weekend, sir?
Yeah, very relaxing, thanks. Just chilled out and then watched a bit of boxing on the Saturday. It was Saturday night for you guys. There, it was in Las Vegas. I like boxing. You had a couple of young guys having a fight. It was a big fight, so... Okay. And apart from that, just chilling out, catching up on the usual news, keeping in touch with everything.
All right, good. No, glad to hear it. Yeah, we all need to decompress once in a while. You can forget to do that. It builds up, and then you just don't realize the sort of mental state you find yourself in, especially with us trying to keep up with all this for the radio.
On the front line of the information war.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, shit, I just sounded like Alex Jones. I think that's one of his slogans, isn't it? On the front line of the information war!
He has the intel, folks. But, yeah, I don't know. Well, I didn't catch up with much in international news. Really didn't see much in the headlines regarding Ukraine. It seems like...
There's a lot going on.
I did hear one report... Robert Ravel was talking about yesterday. Allegedly, some underground bunker was hit by Russia. Well, we can't be sure this is true or not, but if it were true, allegedly, dozens of Zelensky's top decision maker types were taken out, and a bunch of members of NATO were allegedly there and taken out. Again, if this is to be believed, and it's supposed to be in some bunker far underground. I forget what Robert said. Was it like 40 feet or 400 feet? Maybe 400 feet. That sounds more. Yeah. Underground. I don't know. And then the corporate media is keeping completely quiet on this. Even if something like that did not happen, the way things have been turning lately, Russia's been getting a bit more assertive, if you will, this far along. And I could see why they want to just stop talking about it completely, talk about other things, you know, Trump's indictment, the Taiwanese Chinese situation, and anything and everything but that. This domestic politics, like the shootings and whatever. So I don't know. It seems like they're cooling off. But you've still heard updates on the Ukraine zone?
Yeah, I think what's happening at the minute is the Russians are taking huge advantage of the fact that the Ukrainians are really running out of air defense systems and, you know, missiles and things like that. And they haven't been replenished by the West. And I think Russia now is dropping huge bombs, quite crude bombs, but quite big bombs when there's little or no air defense against them, you know. And they've got their fighter jets in the air dropping these things from high and medium altitudes. Other news from the Ukraine side, and whether this is propaganda, I don't know. It probably is that apparently some Ukrainian forces have crossed the Dnieper River into the east side, which was previously occupied, you know, which is the east is occupied largely by Russia. Well, that's true or not. Someone from the DPR, I think, the Donetsk People's Republic, has come out and denounced that as nonsense and said that area is completely controlled. The Ukrainian side have since come out and said that it's not helpful to announce these things because it's since apparently this has been announced that the Russians have started heavy bombing campaigns on that region as well. So, you know, it's really, really difficult to know exactly what's happening on the ground there. I mean, we have a geopolitical, ideological view of what's happening there. But it's so complex and it's so nuanced, you know. Of course, in the West, they just get one view, Ukraine good, Russia evil, Russia bad. And they waved the Ukrainian flags, and history started on the 24th of February last year. But it's so much more nuanced. Even when you, it's been really interesting. But I've watched a few interviews on a YouTube channel by a guy who's an Australian guy. He's an ex-military guy himself, but he's been out in Ukraine, and he's back home now, but he's interviewing a lot of these international soldiers who've went and volunteered in Ukraine. And it's really, really interesting to get a, you know, to get more of an accurate view of what's happening on the ground there, you know? So, I mean, there's a few things that I can ascertain, I think, quite confidently from listening to. I probably listened to maybe 10 hours, maybe 12 hours of these interviews over the weekend. If you want that, I could break down some things which might be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, the first thing is, and this provided some credibility from these people. Now, bear in mind, these are people who have volunteered, including from quite a few of them from Australia, but not exclusively. There's Brits there, Australians. There's one guy over there who's a very, very interesting and quite difficult interview to watch. A young guy from the United States went over there and got really in and over his head and was quite traumatized by the whole thing. But there's a mixture of international volunteers going there. And admittedly, these are interviews that go back, you know, particularly to the start of the war, from about, you know, March through to about maybe November last year, when the proper Russian offensive started, including the beginning of things in Bakhmut and things like that. But they generate some credibility from the point of view that they do, you know, obviously ideologically, these are people who are not unbiased. You know, these are people who are willing to go and fight for the Ukrainian side and actually risk their lives for that cause. So ostensibly, you know, even if they try to be, you know, it's human nature that they're not going to be fully objective, considering, as I say, these are people who have got skin in the game, that they are ideologically driven to the point they're going to risk their lives. So I think it's worth bearing that in mind. You know, but I think they're trying to be honest. One of the first things is just it highlights just how much the culture of corruption is so profound and endemic in the Ukraine, to the point that, you know, the whole structure of the military organization of these guys when they come in, how it's all structured and stuff. First of all, it's very ex-Soviet. It's very stiff. It's very regimented. And the first thing you find out is very dysfunctional and it's very corrupt, including weapons go missing all the time, including weapons that these guys are given to fight. So here you have Ukrainian generals and Ukrainian, you know, sergeants and organizers and getting these guys in, you know, into groups and companies and everything else. And their weapons are disappearing. And then they have stocks of weapons that come in, most of them from the West or wherever, they disappear as well. So these are soldiers who are going to fight for the Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians are the ones that are, you know, presumably stealing and selling their weapons, and, you know, this sort of corruption's going on. Rations go missing. The whole structure is completely dysfunctional. They, whether this is deliberate or not, but they send out loads of international soldiers. It's difficult to ascertain whether they do the same thing with the Ukrainians, but certainly they send the international soldiers on suicide missions. You know, in other words, these guys are trained, a lot of them are trained and savvy enough to know that they're walking straight into a death trap. And they're trying to express this frustration to the Ukrainian side who are organizing and who essentially have authority over them. But they insist that these guys get sent out. And to me, this is all part of the corruption too, because these guys, if they all go out and get killed, they can't start complaining and exposing the corruption. You know, this is the type of stuff that's going on. They also, the international guys get treated differently, though, from the other guys, from the Ukrainian side, insofar as they get treated better in some ways, and they can leave if they want, whereas the Ukrainian guys can't. These guys can leave if they want, but they're also aware that these guys can go home, and they can tell stories, and so there's a propaganda interest there that they don't want these guys going back with too many bad stories. I guess that's why once they realize that they've stolen weapons and this sort of stuff is established, that they don't want these sorts of stories getting out there, which is probably why they send them on these suicide missions. But they do get treated better in some regards because they're from the West. And, you know, obviously there's a propaganda war going on. And so they don't want these guys returning home telling bad stories. The other thing is, I think you can establish from listening to these interviews are some not so good things on the Russian side. The overriding thing on the Russian side is that while they have some very, very professional, seasoned soldiers, they also have a bunch of probably these conscript types who haven't really a clue what they're doing. But the advantage of the Russians is just this, and this is the same story all the time. The artillery is the bombardment is relentless. It seems that the Russians have an almost limitless supply of heavy artillery fire, rockets, missiles of all descriptions. One guy described it as just relentless. But every hour of every day, just relentless. And what's happening is apparently when the Russians see anything, they fire at it. So if they see one enemy, and including if it's in a civilian area, it's just a bombardment of weapon, of artillery. Some of it not so accurate. There's two stories. You seem to get this story where it's you have this really high-end, intelligence, reconnaissance, and surveillance operation on the Russian side, where it's like these guys feel like in a vast area that they're not safe, that the Russians know exactly where they are, and it's only a matter of time before they start firing at them, and that's what happens. But you hear other stories, for example, I think it's in Kherson, and I think Kherson, the Russians eventually withdrew from there. But there were stories there where the Russians seemed to be going crazy. And when the Ukrainians went in there, they found some of the Russian positions, which was just disgraceful. Loads of just empty vodka bottles, horrible stories from the locals about, Russians stealing stuff. The only thing they did pay for, apparently, or give them anything for was from the vodka. And including stories of even rape and stuff like that, that some of the locals were saying. Now, again, maybe they're exaggerating this, I don't know. But you see, you got to remember, you're talking about two very corrupt countries here. I mean, Russia is on the right track, I believe. But, apart from Kiev in Ukraine, and apart from maybe Moscow, St. Petersburg, and say Sochi, places like this, which are much more, cultured, and where they're much more salubrious in terms of money, and we would is much more normal and we'll be able to relate to it. As a country, largely Ukraine and Russia are very backward countries. They're almost like third world countries in many ways, as I say, save those types of places that I mentioned. And there's just a huge, culture of corruption. So you get these young guys who are sent out to fight, imagine, right? So they've got this high-tech gear, they're in tanks with an unlimited amount of artillery, but maybe not so many military skills. And these guys are off their faces on vodka. I mean, you know what I mean? There's some of the Russian side are out of control. The other thing I think you can glean from it probably quite accurately is on the Russian side, they are using cluster bombs. They do drop those cluster bombs. They've been found. But I think...
And that is to assume that civilians could be getting hit as well because they are such... a wide dispersal pattern with them, is that right?
Yeah, and the U.S. have used them anyway, so big deal. In terms of, like, it's not like, the Russians are unique in this. The United States have been known to use cluster munitions. What else? Yeah, so the corruption on the Ukrainian side, just the dysfunctionality of it, is just off the charts. The Azov Battalion, this young guy from America ended up joining the Azov Battalion, and it seems that the Azov Battalion, after the coup in 2014, did have a much more kind of, how should you put it, what would be described as like a kind of a Nazi ideology, right? But over, in terms
I don't know. It seems...
Let's not go into all that. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Neo-Nazi.
Or whatever, right?
Extremist, so like, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The worst elements of how sort of like National Socialism would have been described, these guys would represent that, okay? They're just like kind of real sort of animals. Over the coming years, apparently that's been filtered out a lot, including including these guys have been, the Azov apparently have been banned from running for political power in Kiev. I don't think that's because Zelensky wants, you know, more. He doesn't want any of these, this sort of extreme element in Ukraine. He just sees it as a competitor to him, I think. But oh, you know, when this guy joined it, it sounded like these guys are just, they're just right wing Ukrainian nationalists. They're probably not that much different from how we would be. You know, they're not murdering thugs. You know, I don't think they intend to, like, you know, hurt anybody. They're real nationalists. They would be against a lot of the sort of things we would be against. You know, but they don't, they hate the Russians. And to me, I find this very confusing, because I find this with a lot of these guys. I mean, the Azov battalion are fighting against Russia, but they're fighting for the West. And the West, you know, to some extent, these guys are a hangover from World War II, Holodomor, all this stuff. But I just don't understand.
So some of them do, even if they're portrayed in the negative optics, some of them do have the right revisionist, accurate history as far as the terrors and crimes against humanity the Bolsheviks committed.
Yes, of course, right. Okay, so they're reacting to that. But at the same time, when they're fighting for Kiev, they're fighting for the West too. It was the West who defeated Germany, Hitler's Germany. And it was the Jewish West that was involved in that and funded that. And, you know, I just don't understand how they can square that circle. Because, you know, we can tell the difference between the Bolsheviks and Russia today. Now, of course, there's still a hangover and still sort of some Soviet elements in Russia as part of the culture. You're not going to get rid of that every day or in a short period of time. And it's the same in Ukraine, too. But I don't understand how these guys can fight for the West and still... You know,
when, if I may interject, when they hear people like Macron saying that we're fighting for LGBTQ rights.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I really don't get it. And I think what you find with a lot of these soldiers, their ideologies and their geopolitical views are so propagandized by the West. And one of the common themes is not even so much sometimes that they're fighting for the West. It's just a common theme seems to be wherever they're from is hate Russia. The guy used that term. It's like, I hate Russia group. And so why do they hate Russia? You know, it's not the Soviet Union. And so why this, you know, this hatred of Russia? I can only assume that they buy into all the propaganda. So the Azov battalion seemed to be more extreme and more nasty in the first few years, but it's kind of settled down. Okay, some of the American guys said some of these guys sort of joke around and they make they seek highs sometimes and stuff, but it's almost done in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek way. I think what they are, it's like they are more, some of them are genuinely national socialist in their ideology. So what, you know, it doesn't make you a bad person. And but it seems that They are paid. They have paid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's different motivations there with some of the troops. Well, we have the break upon us here. Hold on, we'll be right back. A chip is sent to the length of his way. Just a shiver with a mouse to the ground. Words as a shout with the language of fear.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. And one of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Back, folks, beyond the official narrative. Here on Republic Broadcasting, Richard Carey with my Monday co-host, Paul Edward Stevenson. And so you were discussing this Azov battalion, Paul, and yeah. It sounds to me like they are more knowledgeable of World War II era revisionist history than that of the current era, as far as seeing what the West currently represents, or looking at how, you know, yeah, currently it's the values they have would be similar, as you say, to our own. Those of the alt-right or far-right, and some would say, those who some in our circles would say are based, you know.
They're
based, bro. They're based.
Yeah, they're based nationalists, and they're also pagan. I think this kind of Nazi narrative, what I learned from, what I suspect from listening to a lot of this content, is that it's the Russians, and I'm not diminishing, I think at the start, that particularly in after the Maidan coup, that these people were particularly nasty and extreme. And don't forget that there was a lot of prisoners let out of Ukraine at the start of the war.
I don't think it's automatic. Anyone though that has, you know, the traditional religions, let's face it, of the European people, those pagan religions in past have at times been maintained by people who have humane sets of values. You know?
Oh yeah, and I think that's what's going on now. So I think at the start it was probably, you know, a bunch of thugs more than anything, to the point that they were very unpleasant people, and they were shelling these people up in the Donbass, etc. This guy's experience is that, you know, because he's from America, he would call them, in quotes, racist, because they refer to blacks as the N-word and stuff like that. But listen, if you go to Africa, there's all sorts of horrible pejorative names for white people. People, you know, it's only in the West that people get so caught up in all this sort of stuff. It's natural, it's tribal, okay? But, and you don't have to take offense to it, it's just human nature. But I think the Russians have made the most of this, and it's in the Russian national interest, I think, to propagandize that to the max, because, of course, it evokes memories of World War II. Here come the Germans again. Here come these Ukrainians who are in this Hitler's Germany ideology. They're coming for you again. So I think the Russians have hammed that up. What else? The other thing which you can definitely confirm, which is good, that the Ukrainians have suffered horrendous losses. Every time you hear these guys going into a battle, even when they're organized, you know, this American kid talked about, he was like blown away by the tanks and this convoy of Ukrainian guys going into, to make an attack on the Russians, and they were just obliterated, just from nowhere, just, you know, and this is this longer distance, you know, intelligence, reconnaissance, and surveillance stuff that you hear about, backed up by just an unlimited, you know, relentless bombardment of heavy artillery fire. And they were all just wiped out. This guy, just him and another guy, there's about three of them got away, and that's about it. They just watched all their mates all being blown up. And, you know, the guy asked him about the numbers. He said about two companies. He said, how many is that? About 400 people. You know, these guys are, you know, and this is regular. And you hear about other companies going out of 30 guys going to make an offensive, and about two of them come back, and one of them's got no legs, you know? So, you know, it's the Ukrainians have been getting a battering. And they're now talking about this, you know, this counteroffensive. My understanding is that they're running out of artillery and men. So this counteroffensive, I think, it seems to me to be like, you know, pure propaganda. But the losses on the Ukrainian side just are horrendous, it seems. And the Russians are doing it from long distance. They're not engaging too much in, like, you know, close combat stuff. It's all from a distance. They don't know where they are. They don't know how far they are, you know. Just one minute they're going in and they think they're going to attack this town and take this town. The next thing, out of nowhere, it's just boom, 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 boom. Just like, you know, everyone's just blown up, you know. And you hear that time and time and time again. So anyway, it was interesting because, you know, when you're listening to, like, you know, third and fourth hand sources all the time, it's difficult to know exactly what's going on. And really, yeah, as much in the wider picture, you know, we would take the Russian side, because at the end of the day, you know, come on.
Oh, well, here, hold that thought, and we'll be right back on the other side, folks. Stick around.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation.
check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey with my Monday co-host, Paul Edward Stevenson. And Paul, were you talking about Putin at the break? I'm trying to remember the thought you had there.
Yeah, so, you know, a theme of these military guys is, you know, the condemnation of Russia is it's an invading force and we're going to help the Ukrainians defend themselves. And those evil Russians, they want to, you know, perform regime change in Kiev to get, you know, to put a Russian puppet in there like they had in there just before the Maidan coup. Well, what do you think the Maidan coup was from the Russian point of view? You've just put a pro-Western, Russian-hating puppet in there. So, you know, they don't seem to ever look at it from that side, and they don't seem to understand or recognize that that country is kind of, you know, there's people in Kiev who are pro-Russian, there's people in the Donbass who are pro-Ukraine. The place is a mess. It's so nuanced. But, you know, I think in the East you've got probably at minimum about a third of that population where Russia are pro-Russian, and it's maybe as much as a half or two-thirds of it. But, you know, they don't recognize that, okay, you know, what do you think the war is about? You criticize Putin for wanting regime change in Kiev. Well, why not? Why, you know, it's either a Russian-hating puppet in there or it's a Russian-friendly puppet in there. And what do you think the war is about? It's about regime change in Russia. And, you know, plenty of officials on the American side have admitted that it's a proxy war against Russia. where they can, you know, exercise regime change in Russia. And then, of course, Zelensky was talking about NATO joining Russia, which is always a red line. And even if you take away all the Donbass stuff and any of that type of stuff, the overriding factor in the whole thing was the Putin's red line, and he's been saying it since 2008, since he's been blue in the face saying it, and longer than that, is that it's a red line for Ukraine to join NATO. And anybody with half an ounce of sense knew that this was ultimately going to result in Russia invading the Ukraine to destroy the place to prevent that happening. But these guys go and risk their lives without ever seeming to do any history or seemingly being incapable of being objective or seeing it from the Russian side, because they're so propagandized. Russia evil, Russia bad. These Australian guys coming over here to fight for freedom and democracy against those horrible, autocratic, oppressive Russians. Well, I mean, this guy's got a short memory. I mean, how oppressive and how severe were the lockdowns in Australia? What does this guy think he's fighting for? He should stay in Australia and stay in his lane and mind his own business, you know? But they're over there, propagandized, everything, you know, Russia, evil. And they're just incapable or just totally unwilling to ever see that Russia has legitimate security concerns, because the United States might want to put a puppet in there. But if they don't have a pro-Western, if they don't have a Zelensky guy in there, and there's a pro-Russian guy in there, or at least a guy who's friendly to Russia and doesn't want to invade them or join NATO, it's not going to matter to America. It's not a national security risk to United States or Europe. But it is a national security risk if to Russia. It's right on their border. But they just, you know, it's a double standard. And it's so ingrained in Western thinking. You know, the West are the most propagandized people in the world. They believe that we're all free. They can be locked in their homes, you know, and suffer all sorts of tyranny over lockdown. And they still think we're this great freedom-loving democracy. You know, they don't acknowledge that hate speech is basically fancy language for you don't have free speech. If you say certain things, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. Over here, it's the worst. Half the population, probably two-thirds of it in the UK, are hopelessly propagandized. I find it just so difficult to live in this country. anyway, I thought it was useful, you know, sharing some of those things, because it did give me a little bit of insight as to what's going on. Because at the end of the day, Richard, as much as we zoom out and we see the larger geopolitical side and we think Russia are on the right side of history here, you know, we're interested also in the truth as to what is actually happening, whether it's good or bad on the Russian side or good and bad on the Ukrainian side. It's really interesting to try and understand what's actually happening out there on the ground, you know?
Oh, it was very insightful, a lot of your information today. And yeah, no, I'm definitely glad you shared it all with my listeners. I just saw an article today that was from 2 days ago saying Germany mass expels all Russian diplomats and Russia counters. So, you know, places like Germany are still taking this hardline stance, even though pretty much leaders of all these countries in Europe, UK, and the US know that it's something that Ukraine won't win at this point. I mean, we've had private discussions from a few countries' leaders with Zelensky being just open and blunt with him about that. We've heard some people in the U.S. even making comments, you know, related to military and government publicly at this point, suggesting compromise as the best you could hope for.
Yeah. And the Germans are getting fed up with it, because there was big protests in Berlin over the weekend. In fact, the Germans have rolled out this tank, which is a kind of semi-destroyed tank. It's a Russian tank, which they parade. I think it's in Berlin or Frankfurt. I think it's in Berlin somewhere. And, you know, this is seen as a, you know, great victory against those evil, horrible Russians. So they put this semi-blown-up tank somewhere in Berlin, I believe. And the protesters who are anti-war and anti-funding Ukraine and anti-sending more weapons to Ukraine, they put roses. They put roses on the tank. So this whole thing is completely backfired, where people are having sympathy for basically the Russians who are in a tank that's blown up and that the Germans are parading as some kind of victory. So that's the sentiment among these particular Germans. They want no part in this, no funding of it. You know, and obviously it affects them too. And the Germans are the biggest disgrace in all of this. They've had their Nord Stream pipeline blown up, and this guy needs to be out of there as soon as. And I think it's only a matter of time before him and his little Annabella Baerbock, are history basically, because it's intolerable. And that sentiment is only growing, and it's very strong in the Czech Republic as well, because they're struggling. As well, so there is a growing sentiment within the European peoples that they want no part in this war, Richard. You know, and they don't want their government sending all this money and equipment over there and keeping the whole thing going and causing suffering at home as well. You know.
Yes, absolutely. I see we have a caller in the queue. Do you want to go to the phones, Paul?
It's up to you, mate. You do what you want.
Yeah, it's fine with me if it's a good time for you as well. Yeah, we have Brian in Washington on the line. Brian, welcome to the show. How are you doing today? What's on your mind? Okay, maybe we lost him. It seemed like he was on hold for a little while there, but I wanted to get
on. I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Here he is. Yeah, I hear you now. Yes, sir.
Okay, so your guest, Paul, today, he's very confused. Maybe he took your advice, Richard, that, you know, there's just these nutcases that think communitarianism is something that we need to oppose and look into. These people opposing this are just swallowing some kind of a Jewish psyop. So all of this goings on is explained by one word, and yet we're not making any headway. Why is that? Well, if you look across the huge spectrum of all of this frigging nonsense on the internet, yeah, you're going to see a consistent attempt to make sure that we will discuss everything but communitarianism. We have experts like Jordan Peterson and James Corbett, and if they aren't talking about it, it can't exist. So, yeah, let's all send our shekels to RBN because they are providing half the story, as opposed to now for the rest of the story. This is extremely frustrating, but if you want to keep going with what doesn't work, I mean, in my world, if I try and try and try, and I'm still getting failures, I drop it, and I move on to something else. But no, RBN just continues with this. Just got done with Chris Hinckley, and Jesus is going to save us. Come on, folks. At least somebody like Adam Green, after 10 or 20 requests.
Can you make a point? What is it you're talking about? Why am I confused, and what is it you believe or failing to mention?
Yeah, just go over the first hour of the broadcast. You said it over five times. I'm confused. I don't understand. I'm saying,
who said that?
You did. I'm saying it's plain as day.
What did I say? I don't understand. No, I said about the. I was talking about the ideology of the Azov Battalion and their position by hating Russia. I said I don't really understand how they can have that position.
Okay, so that's my suggestion. Re-listen to the first hour. You aren't getting the full picture, and it's not your fault. It's Richard.
You're on the air. Give us the full picture then. Tell us all. You've got your moment.
Thank you. There's a replacement for communism and capitalism. It's called communitarianism.
Tell everybody what that is then.
What is communitarianism?
But tell us all about it.
It's
I don't think I was promoting either communism or capitalism in what I was talking about. I was talking about the situation on the ground in Ukraine and trying to get a more accurate picture of what's going on there. I wasn't getting into any heavy ideological stuff from my own point of view.
So, yeah, the dictatorship of the community. You as an individual will be overridden by the quote-unquote collective community. That's the gist of communitarianism. So if you want to live under a world of this community overseer, which isn't really you, it's our opponent masquerading as a community, this is my frustration. So that's my
Why is it so necessary for you to say that Paul is wrong about so many things just because he isn't stressing that word, which you are stressing? And I don't think you gave him a proper response.
Yeah, I don't have a photographic memory. I'm just saying the first hour of the broadcast, he said it a half dozen times. I'm confused.
It's not the first hour because the broadcast only is an hour and we're only 45 minutes into it. So,
thank you. I almost said that myself earlier, Paul.
Okay.
So your accuracy credibility suffered on that one alone, mate.
All right. Well, my accuracy is inaccurate. So point taken. Got a lot of things going. So
the first half hour, you mean?
Yeah, we'll go with that. So you could re-listen to it, and I'm thinking there's a half dozen mentions of some head-scratching, which I'm insisting if somebody was to have Larkin Texas on before he dies, he'd be happy to share some of this crucial information.
Well, Brian, you do know that no more than a couple of years ago, when John Stadmiller was still alive, I mean, he gave Lark another slot once again. I mean, Lark for over a decade has been on RBN off and on. But, I mean, Lark took up the slot for a while, but, I mean, he didn't continue it. I want to say like under a year, actually, and he stopped doing a show. So, I mean, that was on him, you know, that he stopped doing a regular broadcast. But yeah, as recent as a couple of years ago, he had a slot. So, I mean,
point taken. That is all accurate, but you know, things have progressed since years ago. So I think Lark could shine some light. If you were to have him on for an hour, he could point out, you know, what's up with this climate change and the carbon credit system, and does this have any linkages to communitarianism?
Well, we'll take it under advisement to consider him as a guest, and yeah, I'm sure that, you know, the other hosts appreciate your recommendation there. Well, thank you. Let's go to the next. I see we suddenly have a couple other callers. Charles in Florida, welcome. What's on your mind?
Hey, George. Your previous caller, I wonder, communitarianism, is that synarchy? Synarchy being the world globalist version of the technocratic society?
Let me give you, I've just...
Green communism, environmentalism and communism combined, you know, a new variety of communism, you know, with...
I couldn't really understand what... Is he promoting communitarianism? Was that his position?
No, he was promoting using that term and focusing on that as the danger to alert people of exclusively and to recognize everything we're moving toward, you know, this new world order, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, basically, that's his word for that.
I just don't understand how he gleamed that I was promoting that particular ideology. I was trying to ascertain the nuances of the Azov Battalion.
Oh, no. He was just trying to find a segue to justify bringing it up. That seems to be his MO on a lot of shows. And I don't know. I let him go too long, and I figured I'd let you handle him, Paul. And it turned out quite well, I think. Go ahead, Charles.
Oh, yeah. I think the whole idea of the technocratic society goes way back in the 19th century. Edward Bellamy's science fiction novel, Looking Backwards in the 1890s, was not so much globalism or socialist or communist utopian society, but a technocratic society, I understand. Is the scene, was the scene in Blade Runner, you know, where they refer to looking backwards in the Ray Bradbury building in Los Angeles, where they had the final scene on Blade Runner. A Blade Runner society would be a society where human or animals and human beings are being replaced by artificial beings. Mm-hmm. I guess that would fit more in with the technocratic society. They're synarchists.
There are a lot of words. Sure, there are a lot of words to describe this. And yeah, we've seen dangers, of course, in this ultra-capitalism and in communism. And yeah, they've moved toward a fusion more and more as time goes on, the elites with the current regime. But needing the word communitarianism, I mean, I don't know, in the past, maybe there was a certain era where that word was being used by some people in the establishment. I don't know. I want to guess maybe even like the 70s at this point. But no one's using that word to indoctrinate people anymore. So I don't see why we need to be using the word communitarianism. I don't get it. But anyway.
Well, you could think of it as a combination of communism and capitalism under a globalist society. Maybe that's what he's getting at. I don't know if in Europe, the French writer Henri Costan wrote a book on the technocrats and the synarchists. They uncovered a plot during the Vichy regime for a technocratic society worldwide during the Second World War. I don't know if you're
sure.
Familiar with that. They were called synarchists.
No, that is good information. Paul, would you like to respond?
When I looked at
the definition of communitarianism, on my phone briefly, that doesn't have to be all bad. I mean, you know, the National Socialist ideology had elements of that. It says in simple terms, it's a philosophy that emphasizes the connection between the individual and the community. Its overriding philosophy is based upon the belief that a person's social identity and personality are largely molded by community relationships, with a smaller degree of development being placed on individualism. Now, that would be closer, you know, that would also be, you know, consistent with aspects of National Socialism, where the wider race is the bigger issue.
That's true. And I could see people who, if they had some subversive agents out there, they would want to push people away from anything toward that if it could be a threat to their system, you know, dissuade people. So you have to be suspicious.
So was genuine Christianity got elements of that too. I mean, because,
I was thinking that.
You know, individualism is within, you know, Christianity, but then you've got the wider church, which sort of supersedes the individual in many ways. So, I mean, it depends. I mean, you know, it depends. We spoke about this before when it comes to authoritarianism. It depends who the authority is, doesn't it? You know, it depends, you know. If you've got an ideology which is hell-bent on oppressing you and destroying your country and your race and your religion, well, that's a bad thing. But if you've got somebody who's well-meaning and they want to protect your country, you know, one of the reasons there's so much tension in conflict and issues as a hangover of World War II is because when the Germans came into Ukraine and Eastern Europe, they were seen as liberators. They gave them their land back. They fed them, and there was order. Because the communists had come and shot them in the heads or starved them and stole all their property and wrecked the place. Both are considered to be authoritarian. I know which one I'd rather be under.
Well, Charles, we have another caller.
Okay, thank you.
Great point, sir. I always love your calls. And great response, Paul. No, that was all very apt from you both. Bob in Utah, our last caller. Bob, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, I am very angry. angry, just like that other caller, and I am making my voice powerful so you will know who you are dealing with.
Wow. Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah. Communitarianism is an important word. I know Dennis Prager made it up. And if it means something different next month, we'll just change then. Whatever they want us to talk about, you will talk about. You know what I'm saying, Paul?
Dennis,
yes, absolutely.
Dennis Prager, you say. That's who made it up, huh?
Well, it doesn't matter. Okay, I'm not sure if I'm being obvious enough. Communitarianism doesn't mean anything. Everything's right. Racial.
Yes.
It's just all big distraction. The human race existed long before we had spoken language. English is one language among hundreds spoken all over the world. Communitarianism doesn't mean anything. As soon as you start using the language that the Jews provide for you, you've already lost. And that was the only point I wanted to make.
No, that was a good point. And yeah, I noticed dissuaded from a lot of things. But, yeah, certainly talking about Jewish power, these people talking about communitarianism. Well, there was even a reference to Christianity by this caller today. Paul, would you like to respond to Bob?
No, that's fine. Cool.
Well, Bob, all right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Your point's well taken. All right. Well, yeah, now it looks like we're winding down anyway, Paul.
Richard, that they put flyers on that tank in Germany. It was meant to represent Russia's kind of failure in Ukraine by having this Russian tank blown up, and they stuck it in Berlin, and then these protesters came and put flyers on it. So that wasn't the response that the German government was expecting, you know.
Right.
What else had we? Oh, if we got time, quickly.
Yeah.
And the ambassador to France, the Chinese ambassador, Liu Xie, he's got himself in trouble because they asked him, is the Crimea part of Ukraine? And he said, it depends on how you perceive the problem. There is a history. Crimea was originally Russian. It was Khrushchev who offered Crimea to Ukraine during the period of the Soviet Union. He got himself into all sorts of trouble. for telling the truth.
Well, this has been a great show. Always appreciate your company, sir.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
Yes, sir. And folks, either live or in archive, check out Last Man Standing with Paul Edward Stevenson. That's at 12 midnight, Sunday, early Mondays, Central on Republic Broadcasting. Please support the network, and we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can't.